Welcome to Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, the thought-provoking series on how to set, align, and implement priorities. Here's the host of our show, management consultant, speaker, educator, and president of Business Alignment Strategies, Pat Lynch.
Welcome. I am Pat Lynch, president of Business Alignment Strategies. I have as my guest today Maria Agnew, who is a lieutenant with the Chelan County Sheriff's Department in Washington State. Before I introduce Maria, I'd like to say that the purpose of conducting this interview is to get some insights into how to set priorities, how to ensure that your priorities are aligned with those of your organization, and then implement those priorities. So, Maria Agnew is currently a lieutenant with the Chelan County Sheriff's Department in Washington State. She has 23 years of law enforcement experience. In the last 5.5 years, she actually has played a dual role in law enforcement and in emergency operations management. She has a long list of accomplishments, so I am going to have her give you a little bit more information about her background. So welcome to the call, Maria.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Pat.
So if you would, please describe a little bit about your background so people kind of know where you're coming from.
Well, I've been in law enforcement for almost 23 years, where I started out working patrol and did a variety of functions. After about 10 years, I was promoted to sergeant, and then about 3.5 years ago, I was promoted to lieutenant. Our agency did some restructuring, and then we took over the duties of the emergency management function. So I ended up with a dual role where half time is spent under special operations, and for us that's all of the non-patrol related issues around response to public safety. And then I have the emergency management side of things, which is all of our emergency preparedness, homeland security, federal relationships with the state emergency management, as well as anything that has to do with the FEMA side of things. So I have a great deal of responsibility in plans and preparation for emergency and non-emergency related disasters and planned events and that sort of thing. And then I also have the other side where we respond to all kinds of search and rescue and other types of patrols that involve the recreational side of our job.
Great. So you are exactly the person we need to hear from.
Okay.
I appreciate that. Yes. Take my word for it.
Great. Well, thank you.
Okay. So let me ask you, what I'll do is ask you a few questions, but please, take this wherever you feel it should go because you're the expert here. My first question is, in what types of situations do you find yourself setting priorities?
Well, we're required to set priorities in all types of situations, planned and unplanned. So one of them would be obviously in the area of our budgeting. How do we spend our money? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other is how do we utilize our resources? How do we decide exactly for all the grants that we apply for and that we've been granted? How do we make sure that all of those parameters are met? So some of the priorities are set by the sheer funding source that we get. And so our goal is to match up the funding sources with the priorities of our agency and then really look at those kind of grants and funding that help us meet the mission of what we do for the sheriff's office and for the community as a whole. So a lot of that is a planned sort of response in terms of our off-road vehicle, our marine patrol. But it has an overlap into the emergency management because the sheriff's office is also responsible for all disasters, planned or unplanned. And what I mean by that is that we might have we have a history of years of wildland fire, much like California and some other key states. And so my job is to utilize all of the patrol resources to effectively manage evacuations, public safety, responder safety, to any of the responders that go, including the firefighters, so that they're able to do their particular functions and then work with different entities. It's very mixed bag in terms of the DNR, Department of Natural Resources in Washington. It could be the Forest Service. It could be the Public Lands, Bureau of Land Management, on those kinds of disasters. you know, another element would be flooding. That's typically what we see here. And then working on all the processes that need to be in place as to when, what are the actual evaluation points or trigger points that require us to respond, require us to have an emergency declaration, which then invokes different resources. It requires me to know what resources are available at any given disaster. You know, we might have a winter storm, such as the snow and ice we had last year. Those are all, in a sense, unplanned. Mm-hmm. When they're bigger than what your resources are able to take, and then what happens when you're overloaded, and then to plan for the next steps in that, such as in Washington State, we have what we call state mobilization, where we're able to take resources or borrow resources from other neighboring agencies and around the state when we've exhausted all of our local resources. So there's a lot of planning in knowing who and when and how to activate those.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the implementation, which is a lot of that has to do, is very, very situational, because you really don't know how many of those resources you're going to get and how many people, what are your logistics. And so that's a part of a plan. I mean, there's a plan there, but it requires flexibility because each one is similar but different in every time it happens.
Okay. And so it sounds like, so, I mean, that's a lot. so let me just acknowledge that. I mean, and I do know that law enforcement, firefighters, any kind of first responders already, you know, they carry so much responsibility and really have to be able to prioritize once you get to the scene of some kind of emergency. And what I heard you say is that planning is so very important. So I'm wondering if you could maybe share with us some of the ways in which, or maybe the process by which, you know, before the emergencies occur, you know, how do you determine what should the priorities be? What are the criteria? Whether you use any special methodology, and who might be involved in the process of setting the priorities or determining, you know, down what road you go when you reach a certain situation and you have to make some decisions.
Well, I think just because of the law enforcement and the public safety element, and I don't think anyone would disagree that public safety is the number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
So every decision that I believe we make in the moment is based around overall public and responder safety.
Okay.
We do not want anything that we do to continue to further jeopardize the public and certainly the people that are responding. So the first thing we're going to say is, you know, how do we get in there? Say we're going to do evacuations for a fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's our plan of attack in terms of how many houses, how many people? And then how do we evaluate the response to that that is going to help us stay safe while we do that, while we notify the residents or the public, or, you know, how we make decisions around traffic and that kind of thing. So, you know, we know what the goal is. We know that what we want to have happen, which is we want people to stay safe and we want them to be able to get in or out of a particular situation safely. So one of the planning mechanisms to that is, and we're much better at it now than we were 5 years ago, is that we actually do some education ahead of time around what potential disasters of, you know, an area might geographically hold, such as, you know, they may be more susceptible to wildland fire or flooding, or maybe even in some areas both.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see certain areas that have a higher likelihood of being without power during the winter months, you know, and give them the ability to note that and raise their awareness so that they know whether or not they may need to be self-contained or self-sustained, and then work with them on that overall awareness. But that works for maybe 50% of the people.
Okay.
So for the other 50%, we still do 100% of an approach on notifying everybody as much as we can individually. We go house to house. So that takes a lot of planning. We have to dial in on man hours, how many people it's going to take. You know, you see it, at least here, we do our best to be as proactive as possible. So what you'll see now in the planning mode is we may get a big weather event that says, by the way, we may end up with X, Y, and, you know, 3 or 4 feet of snow like we had last winter, and there starts going out some information to the public. We try to one of our best advocates over the last 5 years, and this was kind of one of those things no one really told me about, and we didn't write a template for it, but how do we utilize our partnerships with neighboring agencies and other resources? You know, how are the public utilities involved? How is the State Department of Transportation involved? How is our own county public works? All those people that are out there in the same areas that we are in law enforcement, firefighting, emergency response, but aren't directly responsible for those responses, but can assist us because they are another set of eyes and ears. And so because we've cultivated those relationships and because we have people that will tell us and help us and support us and offer us resources, it almost quadruples our ability to respond more effectively. So that's been a process over, you know, the last 5 years, developing those relationships so that, because they would tell you that they have the same, in a sense, mission as well, and that is to give service to their customers, to give service to the citizens that pay taxes. They may just be giving them power, or they may make sure the roads are safe or whatever. But we also know that if we don't have a collaborative approach, that in the event of a major power outage because of a winter storm, you know you're going to have roads being closed, you're going to have traffic issues, you're going to have the inability for emergency response vehicles to get to those places. And all of us collectively realize the value of getting each other to help us with our particular expertise. So that's evolved in terms of planning and awareness. And so a really good example of that is we had a wildland fire this last summer, and I saw some major distribution lines for the public utility that were going to burn. So I call those people, let them know. We work proactively to help them be aware as soon as possible. They make their adjustments. And then at the same time, we are being proactive as to when they can get in, restore those kinds of utilities, and all the while trying to make sure that the residents that are being evacuated have enough notice and the responders that are going in can get in and out without having a huge traffic clog in the roads.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like really everything does go back to the planning part of it, that it's almost like you're on autopilot in the field. Is that so or no?
It is really like that. It's almost over time, and it's become more autopilot because we've involved more people and we have more people, more other agencies and departments that do play a major role in it, but we never really recognized it. So I would say I would agree.
Okay. So how then, and this really kind of brings us to the second question, but, you know, we can come back and revisit this. And which is, how do you make sure that your priorities in the Sheriff's Department or in your role as emergency management, how do you ensure that they are aligned with the priorities of the organization, or in the case of an emergency such as one of the ones you described, the fire or a flood, for example, that your priorities are aligned with those of the other agency so that you're not conflicting there?
Well, a lot of that has come about because we've recognized in the process of the emergency that we didn't notify someone. And here's an example. 3 years ago, we had the public utilities were driving behind what we call the road close sign, so we didn't let anyone back there because of responders that were going up fire to personnel were going up to fight the fire. And they said, well, you know, we need to be up here because we have these duties. And we're like, we didn't even know that you were doing that. How can we keep you safe to be back behind a road close sign and legitimately there and still recognize the importance of their job? And it came through a process of clarifying roles and expectations and the priorities of what needed to be happened. It took some, you know, time sitting there dialoguing and almost in some cases disagreeing around who was in charge and what priorities were taking place. I mean, that didn't happen overnight. And at the same time, when someone says, well, I need the power cut off, and you're like, oh, well, you never thought of that until right here in this very moment you need that particular thing done. Or you have a water resource that needs to be attended to because, you know, this is the lifeline to the irrigation canal that's going to feed, 500,000 acres of orchard or something like that. So people, that has come in the process of the event, not through, I would say, experience and someone telling us that that was the plan. I kind of relate it to, in my county here in Chelan County, we have numerous little dams, earthen dams, and I was never really aware of that until one of them, there was a breach. And I had no idea the consequences if that dam was to breach. In other words, I didn't know how many people were going to be affected by it. And that had, that was kind of a wake-up call to me, and then I went, oh my gosh, I wonder if anyone else knew this. Well, it's one of those things that we don't really ask about. I didn't ask about because I just didn't know. Other places talk about that stuff, but you're like, well, that doesn't affect us. And I'm not really a whole lot different than some people if it's not right here. Because I was so overwhelmed 5 years ago, I didn't really think to ask those questions. So that's been kind of the trial by fire, so to speak, where little by little those things have come to fruition. So the next person who steps in behind me is going to have several different plans. And, of course, we've broadened out into things I never thought we'd go to, which was a medical response, a pandemic flu.
Right.
What happens if we have a mass casualty incident? Things that our area has really never experienced, like Katrina or something like that. But we could have the need for, multiple response in the event an airliner did crash or something. And so now we've done a lot better job of planning and practicing and doing tabletop type of exercises and actually some functional exercises that get us thinking about what we'll do if we do have some incident like that, or maybe there's a breach in the dam. And a lot of those things have come about because of 9/11. I think the increased awareness has been great because it's really helped us, especially now that actually today that there's a discussion going on as to whether or not we should declare an emergency for the actual swine flu epidemic. So the good news is we've practiced a little bit. I guess we won't really know how good we are in those situations until we've done it. But the real key for me, and this is the part that may be the most difficult for some people, is to look at their current experience and ask if that relates to other things. We're just changing the name of it, or we're changing the event. It doesn't really change the structure in that you still need to respond, you still have responder safety, you still have public safety, you still have to prioritize needs and resources, and just like they do with the pandemic, they have to prioritize who gets those vaccines and, who are the most at risk and be a part. I mean, I'm not a part of how they prioritize, but, where are they going to do it, and, where does it make the most sense, and that still applies to wildland fire. Where do you go evacuate first? And then what's your next plan? And who's the next person to be evacuated? And, where do we need to kind of, in a sense, we just have different evaluation points that go all the way down to a 3 or 4 day or, maybe 2 or 3 months, depending upon the length of the event. And then just roll it into a plan that tells us, because sometimes you can't stop some things from happening.
Right.
You cannot know how many people are going to get sick with the flu. And we're not going to know how many houses are going to burn if the weather isn't working with us. We can only continue to move our plan along, continue to evacuate people out, and continue to let them know in enough time and continue to move that process through. And so that's where planning has taken us to, I think, a much better level in terms of just people are more aware. We need to be more responsive.
Right. It sounds like there has to be almost an extraordinary level of communication, both among the people you are working with in your agency and across agencies.
Those relationships are critical to how effective we are to doing our job, which is, public safety. I mean, because it's always nice to be able to pick up the phone and get a familiar voice and a person who's done this before. I kind of relate that to anyone out there who's ever had a critical situation. They might have been involved in a car accident or they've lost a loved one, and the first person they see is a person who gives them that immediate sense of security and comfort. And that's what those relationships are like when I call the public utility and I say, are you aware that your line's on fire? And I know that person knows who to call, what to do, that they'll call me back. They'll send the resources we need. It's almost, in a sense, you just know that person is very competent, and
okay.
because you have the relationship with them and the history with them.
Okay. Okay. What I'd like to do is just go back for a moment to this idea of setting priorities, because when you started out, you were talking about things that I believe most organizations are dealing with now, and that is how to create priorities around things like budgeting and using resources, and then in some extent, and I know this is a big issue, particularly in the public sector, and that is grants. So what do you do in this time of, you know, organizations having to slash their budgets, and there are people out on furlough or the people being laid off, yet work has to get done. Can you offer any suggestions on the website into a process that people might use, or some things that they may think about in coming to the criteria they might use for such decisions?
Well, it's funny you say that, Pat, because right now the sheriff's office here is suffering huge budget reductions. This year, I think we've been reduced by $500,000, and they want another 10% for next year. So, I mean, we are faced with that exact question on how are we going to keep the people to do the job while trying to maintain the resources to do it effectively. And, you know, I don't know if I have a great answer for that. I just can tell you this, that we will move to a much more reactive state because we're going to have to pull people from one resource to put them onto another. And what I mean by that is, say, for instance, we have a lost hiker, we can't hold the resources back and pretend, or not pretend, but just put them on guard or on notice that we're not going to send them out to look for this lost hiker in case we have other emergencies. We know we will have other emergencies, but we're just going to have to deal with the emergency in the moment, and that's going to really slow down our response because of the budget cuts. And I don't know if I have a good answer on what do you do with that. I mean, I think what the best answer I can give is that this is when we really go back to why people got into public service. This really does test their devotion to public service. Sometimes we give more than we get. We give more time than we get paid for. That's been the case for, you know, many of the people I work with for many, many years. And people respond out of their true love and duty and why they got into this profession in the first place. And, you know, over a period of time, we've seen different influences into how people view that, but hopefully hopefully it doesn't end up hurting us in terms of costing someone their life, and we don't want to weigh that as the scare tactic.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that if we cut our patrol by the projected 8 people that we could potentially cut next year, and add that to the 7 positions we did not fill this year, that's a significant impact on the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a scare tactic. It's just a reality that the people that are still here doing the work are going to be taxed a little bit more. The priorities are going to be first of all, life safety. They're going to be, you know, how are we going to continue to save lives and deal with in-progress type of situations like, you know, overdue hikers, lost hikers, missing children, abducted children, you know, crimes against people are going to be very, very high and always have been, but it's going to force other things to go by the wayside that are preventative in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So
it sounds like it's a matter of going always back to your primary mission.
Right.
Of saving lives, public safety and responder safety.
And you know, part of that mission is around raising people's awareness and training them and giving them the tools ahead of time so that we're not reacting to it after the fact.
Right, right.
And the problem is we're going to end up having to give up maybe a proactive approach because we won't have the manpower to be as proactive as we need to be.
Yes, yes. And I think that's where the education comes in as well. I know here, especially in around Los Angeles and in Los Angeles County, there's been a big push on educating people about the importance of clearing the brush, because there are so many brush fires and so many wildfires, and when you get canyons and forests that catch on fire, if people haven't cleared the brush, then they just make the, you know, the firefighter's job so much more difficult.
Right, right, exactly.
Okay.
So,
well, let me ask you this. How do you know, or do you know, how well your priorities are working? I think you gave us some examples when you said, well, sometimes we find out when something comes up we hadn't considered.
Well, one of the things that I know is that because I am a lot more seasoned than I was 5 years ago, is that I know there's ways for us to recoup some of the costs. And because we've done a great job of following through, learning those procedures, knowing when to activate our emergency declarations, and knowing what that triggers for us for resources because of the experience, we've been very fortunate to actually recoup some of the costs around some of these events that have taken place. That's not always the case in terms of, you know, you can't, you know, relate that to maybe our patrol functions, but in the emergency management side, it's definitely true. And because of that, our agency has seen a return on finances to help support those when they've been overtaxed. So what I mean is, say we would send out a crew of 8 or 10 deputies to do evacuations for a fire. Because we have the process in place that helps us recoup all of the money that goes into that, and we know the different processes that are in place through the state and through the federal government, we're able to take non-budgeted response, emergency response, and recoup some of those efforts. So that's where planning has really helped us. And then we've done a much better job of training our people on how to respond, so they are responding in a much more efficient manner. They know exactly what the goal and the mission is. They know how to accomplish what they're doing. And then they're able to be released immediately and go back to either their regular duties, or if they're brought in from home, they go back home.
Mm-hmm.
So time management-wise has just been critical, and part of that's come about through training and, you know, practice, and then getting a few of those fires under our belt, so to speak.
Right. It does sound like some of this does come through experience and through trying things, seeing how they work, assessing how they work. And is that something that you do after an incident? Is there some kind of assessment or debrief about what you did well and what might be done differently the next time?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, in the emergency, in the incident command system, we call it like an after-action review.
Okay.
Or an assessment or evaluation. And we are regularly talking about, you know, what went well and what could we improve on, and then how do we increase our training, or how do we increase our response, or who are other resources that are available to us that we maybe didn't utilize or didn't think of, or we learned about during the whole process, because it's not uncommon for us to learn about other people's expertise. For instance, we had a multi-day search and rescue where we were able to utilize, you know, 5 different county resources to help us with this location of this overdue hiker. I mean, and without their resources being what they were, and timing's everything, of course, and it just happened to be a good time for us and for them,
mm-hmm.
Not only manpower-wise, but in helping things get closure much more quickly. So that was my first experience on, you know, in that case, we had several different helicopters and different resources available to us. So that was very, very refreshing to know. We do have those resources. They're not always available, but that's a good time to find out that you have them.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, just one more question I have, and that is a general one. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that might be helpful to people who are trying to find ways that they can set priorities and make sure they're aligned and make sure that they're really where they need to be?
Well, I think the most important thing, if I was to say, you know, for my agency in the midst of cutbacks, the midst of people fearful that they'll lose their jobs, is to understand why you're doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If there isn't the purpose and the buy-in, so to speak, if people do not know how what they do fits into the alignment with the organization, it is going to be very difficult for them to fulfill the mission of what you need them to do. If they're there just for a paycheck and they don't know why they're there, and the organization has not done a good job of moving it down to the most, you know, the most entry-level employee so they find purpose, it's going to be difficult to get the extra commitment from those people that's going to help in these tough times to move your agency forward.
Right. And that's true of any organization. It's I think, you know, having worked in the public sector a lot throughout my career, I know that most times people join a particular agency or a particular profession because they really want to make a difference in that way. And so I think people can point easily to the public sector and say, yes, well, you know, people want to be in law enforcement. They want to be firefighters. At the same time, people join other organizations for much the same thing. And
right.
So I think, you know, I agree. Your point is so very important. And I appreciate your bringing it up.
Well, thanks for having me, Pat. I appreciate the time.
So thank you. Again, my guest today is Maria Agnew. She is a lieutenant with the Chelan County Sheriff's Department, and she's also deputy director of the Chelan County Emergency Management. In addition, Maria has her own consulting business. If you would like to find out more from this extraordinary expert, you can check her website. It is www.mariaagnew.com. That's MARIAAGNEW. Thanks again, Maria, and appreciate your expertise so much.
Well, thank you, Pat. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, brought to you by Business Alignment Strategies. If you would like to learn how you can ensure that your organization's people, programs, and processes are aligned with its goals, contact us at www.businessalignmentstrategies.com.